Dedicated to the survival of American democracy in an increasingly dangerous world, this is Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney, acted as Assistant Secretary of Defense for International Security Policy under President Ronald Reagan, founder and president of the Center for Security Policy in Washington, D.C., the go-to man for defense and foreign policy issues, joined by the greatest minds in the security policy business, the special forces in the war of ideas at Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome to Secure Freedom Radio. This is Frank Gaffney. I am going to be escorting you about the battle space of the war for the free world with some terrific guests. We are joined by Dr. Zudi Jasser. He is someone who has served his country in uniform as a lieutenant commander in the United States Navy, including some time on Capitol Hill as part of the support system the Navy provides to the members of Congress in terms of their health services. But much more importantly, in my estimation, is the work that Zudi Jasser has taken upon himself since he left the military. And I don't mean simply his practice of medicine in Arizona, which is extraordinary, but his efforts to provide vehicles for Muslims who want no more than the rest of us to live under the political, military, legal tyranny that some of his co-religionists describe as Sharia. And Dr. Jasser is a man I have had the privilege of admiring from afar for some time, getting to know rather well in recent years, and consider to be truly a national treasure. And so it is, as I say, with the greatest of pleasure that I welcome him back to our Secure Freedom microphones. Happy New Year to you, Zudi. It's great to have you with us again.
Thank you, Frank. Happy New Year. It's great to be with you again.
Well, there's some reasons to think it might not be so happy, but let's talk a little bit about what's happening. I gather there's some breaking news out of your country of origin, Syria, which has been in ferment for some time. Tell us what's happening and at whose hands.
Yeah, I think this is a really important development. As many of you may know, Frank, the Syrian National Council has evolved as sort of the supposed coalition of opposition groups that have met in Turkey and in Europe a couple times, and they're trying to become the de facto opposition group. And what's happened is they've had a significant Islamist influence, which we've counted at about 40% of their 180 members. And now what's happened is the head of it, who was a secular guy who has been, by the way, giving significant lip service, had a picture with Qardawi and others, so it's not like he has been anti-Islamist, but I guess he wasn't Islamist enough, because I just heard a few hours ago out of their last meeting, now happening in Tunisia, that they have elected Louay Safi, who you may know from a Dallas Morning News report that was ousted from teaching military at Fort Hood because of significant Islamist tendencies, his whitewashing of the threat, and was the leadership in ISNA for a while, trained imams, came out of IIIT, which you know was raided after 9/11. So this guy now clearly will put a Islamist face on the SNC. And I think in the short term it's bad, but in the long term it'll be good, because the non-Islamists will not do well under his leadership, and will allow our other coalition, which is the Syrian Democratic Coalition, to begin to grow much more quickly.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, Zudi Jasser, I hope that that is the case. Just a word further on this Louay Safi character. As you say, he's been associated with any number of Muslim Brotherhood front organizations in the United States for many years. And thanks, I think, to work from on part of one of my colleagues was outed and became sufficiently impossible for the military to continue to have him training our personnel after Fort Hood, that he was jettisoned. But interestingly enough, he's been described by some, as you may know, Zudi, in the United States as a moderate, because he thinks that people, well, he would consider you one of them, I guess, who are not sufficiently adherent to his version of your faith, Sharia, as apostates, should only be killed if they are public about their apostasy. That's the definition of moderation. So this is a very worrying thing that he's now coming to the fore. I hope you're right that that it will, you know, begin the process of unraveling this effort. But on the other hand, with, and this is really what I wanted to get into with you next, Dr. Zudijasser, is the U.S. government seems to be becoming even more aggressive than in the past in its efforts to coddle, romance, prop up, or otherwise engage people like Louis Safi. Do you anticipate that that will be what's in prospect in Syria in the near future? And then back the lens up a little bit and talk more generally about the Middle East as you see it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that is what's happening. I mean, this administration has taken the term and the concept of appeasement to a whole new level when you talk about Islamism. And they have been engaging scholars and others that have basically been under the fantasy that somehow Islamists who talk about democracy and elections and other types of mobocracies, basically, that somehow become our allies simply because they shun violence. And in the end, their doctrine, as you've talked about frequently, is very anti-Western, anti-freedom, and anti-minorities in those countries, and that the rights don't come from God, but actually come from Islam and Islamist governance. So at the end of the day...
If I may just interrupt you, that they're only nonviolent to the extent they think it's impracticable, and then when they think it's ripe, they'll be perfectly prepared to use violence, as we've seen Hamas do and others.
Yeah, and I'd like to see, hopefully, I mean, Senator Lieberman had a piece in one of the large outlets in which he talked about that we need to fund the SNC and help them, and just like he mentioned in Tunisia with Ennahda. And here you have a senator who's one of the few, I thought, that understood what's happening, and they almost seem to be surrendering and saying that, well, you know, if we don't help the moderate Islamists versus the Salafists who are more militant and open about their discrimination of minorities, then somehow we're going to have no influence. And I just can't understand how they don't apply the same paradigm as the Cold War. We had a societal consensus that communism and socialism, no matter what its formulations, was un-American and was not consistent with our goals. And we didn't go around funding democratic socialists, you know, but yet somehow with the Islamists, because it's religious based, we are becoming anesthetized to their long-term plan. And I can't tell you how impactful that is on American strategy in Tunisia and Egypt and now in Syria, and that we are going to surrender the Middle East to the Islamists and end up actually having a huge global security threat in the long term.
Well, that's what my fear is as well, Dr. Zudijasser. And as to Senator Lieberman, I admire him, as I know you do, but I had the chance to talk with him a bit about this and have found that he was not as clued up as I would have hoped about this difference between Islamists who seek their identical objectives to Al-Qaeda and the so-called Salafists, but are prepared to bide their time to use violence when it's propitious, as opposed to the ones who are just ready to go violent right away. And this is what makes the work that you are doing, Zudijasser, with your team at the American Islamic Leadership Coalition and your own organization, the American Islamic Forum for Democracy, absolutely indispensable. And would you just talk very quickly, Zudi, in that regard about the work you're doing and your attitude towards some of the things the Obama administration has been doing that we talk a lot about here, specifically having people in your community who all seem to be Muslim brothers, as far as I can tell, they're not thinking about you as one of the people they want to have reached out to. The trainers who are responsible for helping us, you know, combat or counter violent extremism, as they call it, one, and two, this effort by the Organization of Islamic Cooperation to really muzzle what we can say and think in this country. What are your thoughts on those two subjects?
Yeah, it befuddles me that the administration has continued to, it's sort of the lowest hanging fruit syndrome, where in the United States they use these Islamist groups as becoming the de facto leaders of the Muslim community, even though I believe the majority of Muslims obviously don't belong to these groups because they don't represent their interests and because we're in the United States for a reason. They wanted to escape these ideas, but yet they've also been asleep and allowed the Islamists to basically lead the group. And a perfect example is there's a reformist Somali, Abdul Razak Bihi, who Steve Emerson had a report on a week ago, which really hit the nail on the head. Here's a guy who didn't want anything to do with CARE, actually demonstrated against CARE and their behaviors and their ideology, and now they have systematically removed him from training with Homeland Security up in Minneapolis against Shabab and other groups out of Somalia because of the influence of the Islamist lobby upon DHS and upon this administration.
Yeah.
And it's very impactful.
Zudi,
and the OI,
we have to leave it at that, I'm afraid, but I know that you have some more to say, and I want to get you back very soon. Dr. Zudi Jasser of the American Islamic Forum for Democracy and the very important new initiative, the American Islamic Leadership Coalition. Check out their materials. Dr. Zudi Jasser, come back to us again very soon, sir. And in the meantime, God bless your great work. Keep it up. We'll talk soon.
Thanks a lot, Frank.
Hi, I'm Gary Bauer. In high school, I volunteered for Barry Goldwater. I worked on the Reagan campaign and had the great honor to serve President Reagan in the White House. I've been active in conservative politics ever since, and I know conservatism offers the right way forward for America. I also know that Ron Paul's conservatism is isolationist and conspiratorial. He's hostile to our military, hostile to our allies like Israel, and was hostile to great conservatives like Ronald Reagan. He denies that Iran is building nuclear weapons. He says it was a crime to kill Osama bin Laden. He blames America for creating terrorism. He says we don't know the truth about the 9/11 attacks because of a government cover-up. He condemns our ally Israel for defending herself. Ron Paul is not a Reagan Republican. We can do better. The Emergency Committee for Israel is responsible for the content of this advertising.
The first step in winning a war is to know whom you're fighting. 9 years after 9/11, the U.S. security establishment has failed to tell us. The very words we need to describe the war are being outlawed. We went from the war on terror under Bush to the war on man-made disasters under Obama. Neither identifies the threat doctrine behind the aggression, Islamic Sharia law. That's why the Center for Security Policy assembled Team B, an independent group of national security professionals, including Bill Clinton's Director of Central Intelligence, James Woolsey. The result is a book that challenges the assumptions of the current administration and exposes the supremacist nature of Sharia and the jihad its adherents are obliged to engage in. This report names the names of those responsible and makes plain the mortal peril now posed to America's Constitution, our national security, and way of life. For more information, visit shariathethreat.com or order your copy of Sharia, The Threat to America at amazon.com.
Congress doesn't have a budget for 2011, but the GOP has proposed a budget for 2012, and Bill Bennett likes it.
Maybe it helps to have that 2012 in the background, people hearing and seeing Ryan and the Republicans saying they're serious about really cutting the budget
as a backdrop
to this debate about 2011. People make the decision, well, Republicans seem much more serious about this.
Bill Bennett's Morning in America, weekday mornings from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.
Welcome back to Secure Freedom Radio. You're in the cloakroom, former Congressman Fred Grandy, and our guest today, Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio, represents the 3rd District, Dayton and its environs, but the chair of the Strategic Forces Subcommittee of the House Armed Services Committee, and we wanted to talk to Chairman Turner because obviously there has been a very significant strategic defense review by the President of the United States. And Congressman, thanks for being with us. I just wanted to start with a statement that you made, I guess, last week, where you said the following. In short, This review leaves both our nation and our allies unsure of the future of our nuclear deterrent and our ability to counteract attacks from those who seek to do us harm. Could you explain that statement in a little bit more detail? How much are we really compromising our nuclear deterrent under this new defense policy?
Well, it could be quite significant. You know, the concern here is that the president, in his broad statements when he took office, declared that he wanted to venture to a world where there were no nuclear weapons. But so far, he has only ventured down that world in limiting the United States, both in the numbers of our weapons, the infrastructure that we have, and our ability to sustain a nuclear deterrent. Now, what's important about a nuclear deterrent? Obviously, you know, no one is a champion of nuclear weapons as you know, something that is utilized, but
sure.
It is a mechanism of defense in that people know that this deterrent, it deters others from attacking us because they know we are a strong power and we have the ability to both retaliate against those who have nuclear weapons who might do us harm, or even those who might seek to do us harm otherwise.
To that end, one of the understandings I thought of the new START agreement, which of course was very controversial, was that the president was going to make a commitment to pursue modernization. That was in order to get ratification in the New START treaty. Now, you obviously preside over this in your subcommittee. Has any of that modernization started to take place, and do you have any confidence that it will?
We're very concerned because the administration is signaling that it will cut future expenditures for the modernization program.
Mm-hmm.
And here's really the issue. As the administration proposes reducing our overall numbers of nuclear weapons, both either are deployed or non-deployed,
mm-hmm.
What we have to do in investing in our infrastructure is ensure that if circumstances change, that we would have the ability to respond.
Right.
If we eliminate nuclear weapons, we need the ability to produce them in case the circumstances should change and there be a greater risk to the United States. So the president said, you know, under current environment, we have the ability to go to lower numbers and we'll invest in our infrastructure so we have capability to respond. If you just reduce our numbers and don't invest in the infrastructure, then we're left vulnerable.
Well, then let me turn to another policy that the president made, and I wanted to get your opinion of this. He says we are now shifting our focus to the Pacific. What is your opinion of this strategy?
Well, I think certainly the Pacific is an area that that does require some attention, but it currently isn't the issue where, you know, we have traditional investment and support with allies. I mean, certainly NATO continues to be important. Russia continues to be an emerging possible threat. Iran, the entire Middle East, Afghanistan, Iraq, as we look to, you know, our involvement there and what might result in destabilization there, certainly should not be neglected. The involvement that we had in Libya that has left that precariously balanced. Egypt, you know, the whole Arab Spring and what could occur as it affects our energy is something that needs attention now. Obviously, North Korea and China's expansion are something that do require attention, but not at the expense of where we have additional threats.
But you know, you've just articulated a long list of threats, everyone legitimate and some obviously increasing in their danger. But the administration is now saying we need a military that only needs to fight one war at a time. How strategic is that in light of the way the world looks right now?
Well, it's not, and our adversaries get to choose, unfortunately. So our concept has always been to have a military that's flexible and that can respond to the threats that are there. And we don't get to choose how those threats evolve, and we can't tell our adversaries, you know, get in line. It's, you know, as if you're at a meat counter, take a ticket, and we'll come
sure.
to you next.
Right.
We need to be cognizant of the fact that our military, our whole concept of defense, is to make this country safe. When we allow the world to dictate where unsafe circumstances are evolving that and we're not participating, I think we're at risk.
All right. Well, then let me take this right to your workplace right now. You've got a Republican Congress that is really about the only place where we can supposedly forestall any kind of deep defense cuts. On a related matter, Congressman, we've been doing some research here at the center and have produced an algorithm that kind of indicates where cuts will come. In your home state, of Ohio, for example, if sequestration is to take place, we're probably looking at a total of somewhere around 25 and 26,000 jobs, both military active duty, civilian active duty, and contract jobs that could take place if the sequestration cuts dig that deep. What can Congress, particularly the House right now, or Republican House, do to forestall these cuts?
Well, I think, and first off, you know, Fred, what you just articulated, I think, exactly why I voted against this.
Sure.
I voted against raising the debt ceiling with the formation of the super committee and the threat of sequestration because I thought we were playing chicken with our national security.
Absolutely.
You shouldn't have a threat to Congress to do its job. We got to just do our job. Everyone says that if the sequestration numbers are put in place, whether it's the administration, Congress, Department of Defense, universally, everyone agrees that those numbers would be devastating to our national defense. So, you know, clearly a plan has to be put into place to avoid them. That's going to require Congress doing its job to find cuts elsewhere to be able to offset those cuts. Now, we're not seeing that leadership in this president. I mean, the super committee failed with the president clearly stating to the American people, well, I wasn't really involved, an involvement that he had pledged when the super committee was formed. So we're going to have to see in Washington a greater commitment from this administration to help find ways to cut this out-of-control spending if we are to avoid sequestration.
Well, let me ask you something about your own internal discussions within the Republican caucus, because if you just look at the presidential candidates right now, you've got, and he may be something of an outlier, but Ron Paul's numbers would have to indicate there seems to be a somewhat significant non-interventionist movement within the Republican Party. Is that reflected among your colleagues in the House? Are there plenty of Republicans who are comfortable with these kind of cuts, or do you think you'll be able to stand together against the administration and probably a Democratic Senate, at least for the next year, to keep these from happening?
The only people who support these type of cuts are either anti-military, anti-defense, or ill-informed. These cuts don't go to just our ability to field future systems. They go to our ability to even function with the current military that we have. The Department of Defense has been very straightforward that we're talking about parking aircraft carriers, parking planes, that this is an absolute deconstruction of our military. At a time again when the world is getting, less safe. You have Russia making and during their campaign, again, threatening statements to the United States, as we look to field a missile defense system, Iran and North Korea, both, expanding their missile programs and seeking nuclear weapons technology, so that they can be a direct threat to the mainland United States.
Well, do you anticipate initiatives, particularly from members of the Armed Services Committee, to reinstate some of these cuts? And if you actually put that legislation into the hopper, will you get significant Democrat support? You know, when I was a member, there were a lot of very hardline, hawkish Democrats. I don't get the sense that there are as many now in your caucus and in your Congress.
I think most of the hesitation on the part of Democrats in the House are that they're looking to the president to show some leadership in this. And secondly, to avoid sequestration, real cuts are going to have to be identified elsewhere. And as long as the president is campaigning I'm not going to let these cuts occur, then we're going to be in this stalemate really throughout this presidential election. What's unfortunate is, as there are those who say sequestration doesn't happen until January 2013, but with your service in Congress, that those cuts are going in place right now.
Absolutely.
DOD having to plan. They can't just walk off a cliff January 2013. They have to start pulling weapon systems back. There are service members who are not being allowed to reenlist because their reenlistment date falls within the sequestration period, and there's uncertainty as to what we're going to be able to do with our military. Those are all issues that are happening now.
Well, Congressman, we support you in your efforts to kind of forestall those cuts, and I hope that at some point on Secure Freedom Radio, you'll come back for a longer discussion where perhaps we can delve into the actual plan to forestall these cuts. But that will have to do it for today. We've been talking to Congressman Mike Turner of Ohio in the Armed Services Committee.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
Hey parents, finding it hard to communicate with kids in today's world of ever-changing slang?
Hi son.
Excuse me?
Introducing the Communicizer. Just strap non-toxic Communicizer to your mouth and go from boring old man speak.
I'm here if you want to talk.
To 100% off the chain.
Text me whenever, yo.
It's that easy.
Thanks to Communicizer, I'm relevant to my kids again. I'll fly, boo.
And now when you buy Communicizer, you get the auto-tune attachment free. Sounds so hip-hop, your kids will want to talk to you for hours.
I used to have to walk 3 miles uphill to school every morning, shorty.
I love you, Dad.
I love you too, son.
Communicizer is not available in stores because it doesn't exist. But that's okay. You don't have to be perfect to be a perfect parent. Because kids in foster care don't need perfection. They need you. For more information on how you can adopt, go to AdoptUsKids.org. A public service announcement from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, Adopt Us Kids, and the Ad Council.
For decades, the Democratic Republic of Congo has endured economic collapse, poverty, and war. More than 3.5 million people have died in the conflict. Today, rebel forces continue to wreak havoc in the eastern Kivu provinces. The International Rescue Committee estimates that 30,000 children have been recruited as soldiers, and thousands more have lost their parents. Most of these children lack the most basic level of goods, security, and most especially, clean drinking water. Yet, there is a well of hope coming to eastern Congo in a village called Uvira. Washington, D.C.'s National Community Church is partnering with Global Outreach to bring a water pipeline to the Congo for Christ compound, an orphanage for children who have lost their parents to war and AIDS. Building a clean water source will sustain the school, provide for the children, and hundreds more in the village. Go to www.waterforcongo.com. Learn about the work of Global Outreach and give. You can be part of the community in Uvira, and like a well, you can be a source of hope in life. www.waterforcongo.com.
Hi, I'm Drew Brees, NFL quarterback for the New Orleans Saints, here with Bugs Bunny to remind you to get moving every day.
Because when you get moving an hour a day,
you fuel your body and your mind.
So what do you like to throw around the football like Drew?
Skateboard.
Play frisbee in the park.
Ride a bike.
Kick the soccer ball around.
Or dance in your room.
Just move it your way.
Because nothing makes you feel better than moving every day.
And that makes you part of a winning team.
So be a player.
You'll have more energy to do the things you like to do.
Move it your way and be a player.
Get up and play an hour a day, Doc. Check out how to be a player at letsmove.gov.
Head online to get tips on great ways to get moving every day.
That's right, at letsmove.gov. Let's hear that one more time, Doc. That's www.letsmove.gov. A message from the Ad Council and HHS.
I'll pick you up after school. Okay, I got it.
It's easy to take a day for granted. You and your family are connected by routine, and you stick to it. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life as you know it has completely turned on its head? What if your day's routine is disrupted and you can't reach your family? Have you planned for that? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, it's up to you to be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Today. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Ready.gov. This message brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Intelligent Talk on WRC 1260.
Now more with Frank Gaffney.
Welcome back. We are joined once again by one of our all-stars here at Secure Freedom Radio. His pseudonym is Reza Khalili. He is a man who has had to adopt a nom de guerre, shall we say, as a result of his coming in from the cold. He served as a spy for the Central Intelligence Agency inside one of the most dangerous organizations on the planet, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps. He has chronicled his time in the service of the Praetorian Guard of the Iranian Mullahocracy in a superb book called A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran. And Reza, it's great to have you back with us. I think this is the first time since the new year. Welcome back and happy new year to you. And Gosh, there's so much to talk about with respect to Iran today. I don't even know really where to begin. But let me begin by simply saying thank you for joining us again.
Well, thank you so much for having me. Happy New Year to you and to all your listeners.
Thank you. Well, listen, let's start with some of the headlines in the news at the moment. There has been, as you know very well, a kind of, saber-rattling, I guess you'd say, out of Iran of late, in particular in response to the threat of intensified sanctions, among others, a demonstration of maritime power and warnings that the Strait of Hormuz, the critical entry point and exit point for the Persian Gulf, will be closed by the Iranian regime if American carriers come back in, for example, or if they otherwise are pressed too sharply by these sanctions. First of all, Reza Khalili, what do we make of this set of threats? Are they credible in your estimation? Is the regime serious about, for example, attacking an American carrier should we decide to bring one back into the Persian Gulf?
That's a great question, and you might be shocked to learn that during Ayatollah Khomeini, the founder of the Islamic Revolution, actually in the Iran-Iraq War, when the U.S. Navy entered the Persian Gulf to maintain the flow of oil and protect the tankers, Ayatollah Khomeini ordered the guards to attack the U.S. naval vessels with whatever they had, only to find out that they didn't have the capability to do so. So they right now they believe that they have the capability, and actually, as I revealed, Ayatollah Khamenei has ordered the guards to prepare for war, and they have analyzed that America is weak, and due to the global economy, Iran can successfully enter into a limited conflict with U.S. and come out victorious. And recently, the Iranian armed forces have announced, as I revealed, that there has been an official order by Ayatollah Khamenei to close the Strait of Hormuz should the West pursue with its sanctions. So I think they're pretty serious, and obviously it's going to be a major miscalculation by them, but nonetheless, Khamenei has issued an official order to the forces of the Islamic regime to close the Strait of Hormuz should the West pursue with the sanctions, and therefore they're pretty serious about this. And I think their miscalculation, though a miscalculation, nonetheless will cause destabilizing the world economy.
Well, so you take this threat seriously. Reza Khalili, give us a sense, for those of us who are geographically challenged, what the Strait of Hormuz is like. How hard would it be to attack vessels passing through it? And if one were to sink, an American carrier, for example, or some commercial vessel, a tanker, for example, in the Strait, would it, in fact, block it up or otherwise make passage very, very difficult?
As I've described in my book, A Time to Betray, I was in the Persian Gulf. In one of the missions, we went to the Geshm Island, to the Abu Musa Island, and from then they were preparing military installations there, placing Chinese-made anti-ship missiles, Silkworm, and now they've got the cruise missiles. So you've got the Abu Musa and several other islands heavily militarized by the Islamic regime with anti-ship missiles, and then they've got submarines, mines, and then most important, though, they've got all these ballistic missiles that could be launched from deep within the Iranian territory and target the very narrow waterway of the Strait of Hormuz and destabilize the flow of oil, and therefore there will be several consequences if such conflict breaks out and will directly affect the global economy and stability.
So in addition to the physical impediments to traffic in the Gulf, you see some very significant strategic and certainly economic consequences as well. Let's turn, if we may, Reza Khalili, with you to another part of the challenge that Iran represents at the moment. We're being told that they have brought online now a deeply buried nuclear enrichment facility near the city of Qom. What can you tell us about that facility and the implications, if it's true, that it is now online?
Well, the Fardo facility, which they announced now that has gone online, they had announced for a while that they're going to transfer their stock of the 20% enrichment uranium from Natanz to Fardo. Fardo is in a Revolutionary Guards military compound. It's deep, built deep underground, and it's heavily secured and protected by anti-air missiles, which they obtained from Russia. And they believe that that facility will be hard to take out by the West or even Israel, and that the stock would be secured. But they are also continuing with the 20% enrichment at the Fardo facility, and because of the size of it, it cannot be justified that this is for the nuclear power plant, that they need the fuel for nuclear power plant, because it can only house 3,000 centrifuges. So what's going to happen is that within 4 to 6 weeks, they could move on further and reach the 20% enrichment into over 90% and actually use it to weaponize their missiles with nuclear warhead. And we've got to understand that when President Obama took office, this regime barely had enough fuel for one nuclear bomb. Now they have enough for seven nuclear bombs. At that time, they enriched to 3.5%, worrying about consequences. Now openly, they're enriching to 20%. And as the Kayhan newspaper boasted, which belongs to the supreme leader of Iran, that Iran now has two sites enriching uranium. So they're moving full speed ahead, and the West still doesn't understand that they are determined to get the bomb, and our weakness only emboldens them to achieve that.
Reza Khalili, I hate to drag you into domestic American politics, but I just wonder, again, as kind of an expert witness based on your time inside the belly of, well, the beast, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, what you would say in response to someone like Ron Paul, a Republican presidential candidate who insists that really there's no evidence that Iran is seeking a bomb, let alone that it's close to it, and all of this is unwarranted speculation and concern designed to sort of precipitate World War III. Give us your sense of the validity of that assessment, or lack thereof, quickly, if you would.
I respect Ron Paul and his supporters, but I totally disagree with his vision, with his discussion on Iran and the danger of the radicals who rule Iran. And I got to say, Ron Paul, there's a contradiction within his statements. I mean, if he's a defender of the Constitution, if he stands up for the freedom and democracy which this nation provides, and has been the guiding light for freedom across the world, Why was he the single representative who voted no on the unbinding resolution in condemning Iran's vicious violence against the protesters demanding a fair democratic process in 2009?
A very good question. So hold the thought, Reza Khalili. We are coming back to you in just a moment with much more from a man who knows from inside what the Iranians are up to. Reza Khalili, straight ahead.
We want to know what you think here at Secure Freedom Radio. Leave your comments or questions for us at 1-800-332-7131. That's 1-800-332-7131.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
I went from a size 18 down to a size 5, and I was able to keep it off.
Angie had some serious challenges.
I had gone through a divorce and put on quite a bit of weight. There was an accident where I was put on a lot of medication, and I put on over 60 pounds. I tried every kind of diet, but diets just did not work.
Diets don't work is something they hear a lot over at the MetaSystem from Judy Singer.
I heard about Judy Singer's Meta System, and I thought, well, you know, couldn't hurt to call. And I called them up, and they told me all about the product, and I thought, well, I'll give it a try. From the first week that I was on it, I wasn't hungry a lot, and it was just amazing. Jumping about 3 months ahead, I dropped 63 pounds.
If you're ready for a natural product that cleanses your system and helps you lose fat, talk to a Judy Singer counselor about the Meta System. Call 1-800-711-JUDY. 1-800-711-JUDY. The Meta System from Judy Singer. Powerful, all-natural weight loss. 1-800-711-JUDY.
Hi, this is Frank Gaffney. My day job is running the Center for Security Policy, which each weeknight brings you this program. But Secure Freedom Radio is just one of the important contributions the Center makes to the common defense. We call our team the Special Forces in the War of Ideas. Like the real Special Forces, we strive to be agile, creative, and highly effective in identifying threats to our country and how they might best be countered. We can't do all this without you, though. Also, like the real Special Forces, ours need ammunition. And in the War of Ideas, ammo is money. The Center is a nonprofit, tax-exempt organization. Contributions to its work are tax-deductible and an important investment in your security and freedom. Find out more about the Center for Security Policy and how you can help keep its Special Forces team in the fight by visiting securefreedom.org. Many thanks.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
I have held the same mirror for 13 years.
I have been decorated with purple dinosaurs, baseball teams, and football helmets.
I have witnessed 33 Thanksgiving dinners and one wedding proposal.
I have tiny notches marking the growth of three children.
I have caused a learning disability.
I am the reason that a fifth grader simply can't sit still.
I am responsible for a five-year-old's rage.
Just because you can't see lead paint doesn't mean it's not on walls, doors, windows, and sills. Today, lead paint poisoning affects over 1 million children. If your home was built before 1978, your family could be at risk. Let's make all kids lead-free kids. Log on to leadfreekids.org or call 800-424-LEAD.
I am the reason a child has trouble hearing.
If your walls could talk, what would they say?
Brought to you by the Coalition to End Childhood Lead Poisoning, EPA, HUD, and the Ad Council.
Is Nancy Pelosi looking to a higher power to get a balanced budget? Hugh Hewitt sets her straight.
When I hear you speak about this issue, of course, it's the Gospel of Matthew. When I was hungry, you begged me to eat and listen to
I just got to stop here. Nancy Pelosi quoting the Gospel of Matthew, as though that's got anything to do with the government. Let me just tell you, it doesn't.
Can I get an amen?
The Hugh Hewitt Show, weeknights from 6 to 9 on 1260 WRC. New choice, intelligent talk.
If you're a veteran of Iraq or Afghanistan, like me, coming home can be harder than expected. I felt a little out of place, but it turns out I wasn't alone. At IAVA.org, there's a free online community of thousands of OIF and OEF vets who've got your back here, just like they did over there. So now, I'm never alone. I can get the resources I need and talk to tons of people who understand where I'm coming from.
Whether it's navigating the GI Bill,
or VA hospitals,
managing the transition home, or meeting people you can share stories with,
you'll find it at IAVA.org.
Even if it's just everyday stuff,
like getting tips on where to find a nice sweater for my dog.
Did he just say that?
Really?
What?
Okay, maybe not that, but everything else. No matter where you are, Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America is there for you. Join our community at IAVA.org.
We've got your back.
Brought to you by Iraq Afghanistan Veterans of America and the Ad Council.
Go to SecureFreedomRadio.org today. It's your freedom. It's your country. Frank Gaffney's Secure Freedom Radio.
We're back once again with Reza Khalili, a man who has led an extraordinary double life. He has chronicled it in a book entitled A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran. He knows whereof he speaks, and as he has been describing with us in the previous segment and in previous appearances here at Secure Freedom Radio, we are on the cusp of an Iran armed with the most dangerous of all weapons of mass destruction, nuclear technology. And Reza, I had to interrupt you on the point about Ron Paul, but I think we got the gist of it. Let me ask you this. We are currently hearing increasingly about the attachment that the Iranians at the leadership level, not the vast majority of Iranians, needless to say, but the leadership, both the Mahmoud Ahmadinejad faction and the Ayatollah Khamenei faction, that there is an attachment to this idea of the 12th Imam coming back and ushering in the golden age of Islam under certain circumstances. Would you tell us about that school of Islam and what it portends if, in fact, the Iranian regime now is going to have at its disposal seven or perhaps more of these incredibly devastating weapons, nuclear devices?
That belief is the center of their ideology. I mean, it's what the Quran promises, that in the end of times, the last Messiah, Islamic Messiah, will reappear, kill all the infidels, and glorify Islam worldwide. And we have to take that seriously. Ayatollah Khamenei truly believes in that. The clerical establishment truly believes in that. The current commanders of the guards in place truly believe in that. And that justifies their action. And they look at the events in the Middle East, and they see that centuries-old hadith have called for these events to transpire, and they believe the time is close, and they believe that the trigger which is needed to bring about the return of the last Islamic Messiah, the Shia's 12th Imam, Imam Mahdi, is the destruction of Israel. So their plan to obtain the bomb, there is a greater plan behind that, and the world fails to see that, fails to understand that, that these people are determined in bringing about the end of times. And if you study what they teach at the Haqqani School and the seminaries in the city of Qom, and that's how every graduate of Haqqani School, which was founded by Ayatollah Misbahi Adli, was one of the most fanatical clerics in Iran, run most of the security apparatus of the Islamic regime. So this is like a cult, and they are getting close to that, and this is why we see that they do not respond favorably to any incentives. And despite the total breakdown in the Iranian economy and possibility of war, they still pursue their nuclear bomb. That's because Allah has promised them the final victory.
Yeah. Reza Khalili, let me ask you this. You have uncovered a shocking documentary that removes, I think, beyond any dispute, any doubt, that what you've said is correct, is authentically the belief and aspiration of the regime in Iran. Tell us a little bit about this movie, and specifically, if you would, I've been told that there is a conviction on the part of those who adhere to this notion of the 12th Imam's imminent return that, in fact, 2012 is the year in which this is to take place. Can you give us, you know, any insight into that proposition, as well as the larger justification or background for this this worry that you've expressed so clearly?
Oh, well, yes. Actually, I was informed by my sources within the Guards that they were making the documentary through the Guards, the Revolutionary Guards and the Basij were in charge of the project. They were going to distribute it in the Middle East and incite the Muslims that the end is close, that Israel will be destroyed. And so when I put it out, it really shocked the regime. And in it, and the documentary is called The Coming is Upon Us, and it is on my website, atimetobetray.com. When you watch this, you clearly understand that they feel the timing is close, and that they feel that they're going to create a situation where the armed forces of the Islamic regime will enter into Iraq, will attack Israel concurrently with Hamas, Hezbollah, and other factions, and will confront the U.S. and bring about the destruction of Israel. And the timing has it that the Hadith say then that leader makes the move. It coincides with some times in 2012. So that's why they're so excited. They feel that it is very close, and I would advise everyone to watch this documentary to understand the ideology which drives their action.
Yes, it's a real public service that you've brought it to our attention and made a translation available. A Time to Betray.com is where you can find it, folks. You also are writing frequently for Pajamas Media. It's a terrific service that you're providing. Reza Khalili is our guest, a pseudonym he has to protect his identity now that he lives in the United States, and has published a devastating indictment of this regime entitled A Time to Betray, The Astonishing Double Life of a CIA Agent Inside the Revolutionary Guard of Iran. Reza, we only have a few more minutes with you, and thank you for taking two segments with us to do it, but two topics that I also would very much appreciate your comments on. One, the death sentence that has just been handed down for a man, a former U.S. Marine, accused of spying, now in Iran. And secondly, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad's tour of Latin American enemies of the United States. Give us a sense of these two breaking stories, if you would.
Well, Mr. Hekmati has been handed down a death sentence by the revolutionary courts in Iran. We've got to understand that he's an American citizen. He was born here in America. He's a former U.S. Marine. And I'm baffled by the lack of action by the U.S. government speaking out and warning the Iranian regime not to harm Mr. Hekmati. You see, our silence will be translated into weakness, and they will, they might carry out this this order, which would be devastating. I am kind of shocked that there is not more media coverage, because the more we are outspoken, the more media talks about it, the more we become vocal, then it can make the authorities in the Islamic regime think twice. And so we've got to do that to save Mr. Hekmati. Now, as far as Ahmadinejad touring Latin America, as I've described in the book again, they've been very active in Brazil, in Paraguay, in Venezuela, and other areas in Latin America. They have infiltrated. There is a big operation within the Islamic community throughout the mosques. They are recruiting, they are training. Their major ally, Hugo Chavez, has allowed them to establish several bases on Venezuela soil under the fake identity of factories and others. And you've got Hezbollah fighters being sent there, the Ghost Force fighters being sent there. As I revealed several months ago, they've come to an agreement with the Hugo Chavez to build a missile site in Venezuela.
Yes.
And then place Iranian missiles over there.
Yes, that's a site that is not being masqueraded. They're actually above board that it's coming. Again, just to close this out, Reza, we only have a minute. The point that I think you have made so well and that needs to be impressed upon all of us is these sorts of actions and the failure of the United States to respond effectively to them can only be seen by our enemies as emboldening and in evidence of their ultimate triumph, as you say. Reza Khalili, we're going to have to let you go. I'm so grateful to you for the warnings that you have given us, the authority that you bring to them, and the clarity with which you are issuing them, lest we fail to appreciate the perilous times we are in. I hope you will keep us apprised and keep coming back. Thank you for your service to our country as well as to the people of Iran through these warnings. And God bless you, sir. We'll look forward to talking with you again soon.
You're listening to Secure Freedom Radio with Frank Gaffney from the nation's capital in Washington, D.C.